Welcome back, Ruby Tuesday. As always, I'm Patrick Ruby of Sports on Earth, and joining the podcast today is my Sports on Earth colleague, Sean Powell. Sean, welcome aboard.
Patrick, it's a pleasure to sit here and talk with you.
It's way overdue. Now, when we were slammed to record this, a time to record, last week, this was last Friday, so not that long ago, we were just going to talk about the NBA playoffs. You know, you cover the NBA pretty extensively for our site. I'm a big basketball fan. I write about it a lot, partially because I enjoy it too much to want to write about it. And I thought it would be really fun just to break down, dig into what's been, to me, like the craziest, most competitive first-round games that I can remember. But then Saturday morning happened, and this new Donald Sterling mess happened. And when I say new, it's really more the latest Donald Sterling mess that happened. If there's anyone out there listening who doesn't already know the story, the nutshell goes like this. Sterling's the billionaire owner of the Los Angeles Clippers. Not to put too fine a point on it, but he's basically a terrible person. He has a long history of alleged racist statements, a very skeevy personal life rife with sexual harassment lawsuits. Back in 2009, he paid the largest settlement ever for a housing discrimination lawsuit in which he attempted to evict blacks and Hispanics from his properties. He once celebrated Black History Month in the wrong month. And the list just goes on with this guy. But again, over the weekend, something new happened. TMZ and Deadspin obtained audio recordings, allegedly of Sterling talking to his girlfriend, telling her not to take photos of black people and put them on, and I quote, the Instagram, not to bring black people to Clippers games, including Magic Johnson, and also talking about how he gives his mostly black team roster, quote, supports them, gives them food and clothes and cars and houses, unquote. Oh, and by the way, Sterling's girlfriend, who he's talking to in these recordings, she's African-American and Mexican. So, Sean, you wrote a column right after this broke. And like some other people, you called on Clippers players to threaten to not play for Sterling. But you didn't stop there. You also called on other NBA owners, players, league office, the ticket-buying public, white and black, by the way. Basically everybody. Come together. Apply pressure, get Sterling to leave the NBA, to basically make sure this guy at least sells his team in the offseason. Now, at the end of your column, you wrote, this scenario is a fantasy. After the last couple of days, does that fantasy seem closer to being a reality?
You know, I'm not so sure, Patrick, because these things are tricky. It's not like Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, can just sort of wave a magic wand and make Donald Sterling disappear, as much as a lot of people would like that to happen. The NBA bylaws and the ownership, the fine print, you know, for ownership in the NBA, it's kind of secretive, but there really isn't anything that allows a commissioner to force an owner to sell unless it was for financial reasons, like the guy couldn't meet payroll, couldn't pay the bills, things like that. That sort of happened with a couple of owners, you know, in Sacramento, the Maloof brothers, they had some financial difficulties. George Shin in New Orleans, and he had to basically hand the team over to the NBA. But there's nothing in the bylaws to, as far as I know and anyone knows, says that you must sell your team if you are viewed to be racially insensitive over a privately recorded phone call that becomes public. You see, it could be a different case if Sterling was found to have discriminated against one of his black employees for the Clippers. But you know what the strangest thing? He is one of the few and one of the first professional sports owners to hire a black person to run his team. He's had black coach head coaches in the past. And his black players are, you know, among the highest in the NBA. Of course, they're very good. You know, obviously Chris Paul's going to make a lot of money, but he's going to make a lot of money. So it's strange. You're trying to dump a guy who you know has a racist past and who you know has discriminated against minorities before in his private business over a phone conversation. And I'm not so sure how that will hold up in court.
I'm, you know, it is a weird dynamic. I'm glad you brought up sort of these parts of Sterling that seem almost impossible to reconcile. You know, like I mentioned, the girlfriend he is allegedly talking to, I think, was half African American, half Mexican. two groups he's also alleged to have discriminated against in that housing settlement I mentioned. What do you know about this? Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Let me interject here. The race, I mean, back in the slavery days, you had white racist plantation owners, you know, raping their, you know, their slaves. So as far as who he had sex with, you know, look, I don't think the race matters. But everything else you're about to bring into play, the fact that he's in a mostly black league, you know, he hires black employees, you know, coach, players, general manager, things like that, it does seem kind of odd. But, you know, I think you almost have to separate the two. You know, on one hand, Donald Sterling is trying to hire these people because he thinks they are, number one, can help him make money.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, maybe someone like him can look beyond race because, as we know, in these matters, it's all about the almighty dollar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it does seem like, I guess the color green would outweigh all the other colors here. The Clippers did protest Sterling this weekend. They wore the shooting shirts inside out to not display a team logo. They also wore black armbands. What did you think of the protest that they did go out and do?
Well, I think I had several feelings about it. Well, I have mixed feelings about it. Now, number one, if I were protesting, I wouldn't have played the game. Now, that's mm-hmm. a powerful and historic statement. I mean, that's never been done before. Can you imagine the hell that would have resulted from that? The TV, commissioner, sponsorships. Can you imagine what kind of disruption that would have caused? And based on the way they played, they lost by 21 points. They probably should have, you know, boycotted the game anyway. The other
right.
thing, the whole thing about tossing their all that stuff and thinking, okay, that's symbolism, and symbolism can be great. But you know what would have been the greatest protest?
What's
that?
It
should have been last summer when Chris Paul and Doc Rivers could have coached and played anywhere, and yet they decided not to work for Donald Sterling. That would have been the biggest protest, because by taking the man's money, you basically help legitimize him in terms of turning the Clippers into a potential title-winning team. You put money in his pocket. All of a sudden, the arena's selling out, and Chris Paul is on national commercials, and Doc Rivers is the savior, and you know they got a shot to go all the way, and blah, blah, blah. So wouldn't the best protest would have been not signing up for Donald Sterling in the first place? And we're talking about two smart men, Chris Paul and Doc Rivers. These guys aren't idiots. They're smart men. They knew about the man's history. Seriously. So why did they decide to team up to help Donald Sterling? And don't give me the whole money thing. Well, they wanted to make money. Doc Rivers could have made a ton of money anywhere. He could have had his pickup jobs. He probably would have been the head coach of the Knicks right now. Chris Paul could have gone anywhere. And, yeah, the Clippers probably could have paid him more by virtue of, you know, the collective bargaining agreement, but he could have sort of maneuvered a sign-and-trade. He could have gotten the most money and gone elsewhere. And these men knew about the man's history. It's part of public record. And yet, for whatever reason, maybe they can explain, they decide to partner up with Donald Sterling. And it blew up in their face.
I think what you said, they took the money. I mean, I think that's probably the biggest thing. But you said they could make money elsewhere. That's true, too.
And see, the thing about it is, it wasn't about the money. I guess it was to an extent, but they could have made money anywhere. And besides, this wasn't Chris Paul's first big contract. It's not like this guy was only making peanuts and now he finally had his chance to make a big score. Chris Paul was wealthy before this. Doc Rivers was making upwards of, $10 million, whatever it was in Boston, and so his contract just carried over to the Clippers. These aren't poor people looking for their first big score, starving, desperate. You know, and they could have worked anywhere and got virtually the same amount of money.
Well, I mean, two things. We should come back to this in a few minutes, but I mean, two things that we will come back to. One, in terms of working anywhere, Chris Paul, how he originally ended up in L.A., was with a different team than I think he was maybe intending to or wanting to or could have ended up with, which I think we should get into in a little bit. But also, with Rivers, I wonder if it's, like you said, not just money, but maybe an athletic opportunity. The Clippers had actually become respectable and or contending. But like I said, let's get into that in a minute. I want to go back to some of what we're seeing, the maybe not protesting, but we're seeing statements against Sterling. Again, from a league and from players and from people that have been silent mostly up to this point. We've seen a number of players just this weekend make strong statements. LeBron James said there's no place in the NBA for Sterling. You cover the league. Have you talked to any players in terms of what they think about this? What are you hearing from them, either on the record, off the record?
Well, Patrick, let me just talk about the response, first of
Sure.
all.
Yeah, please do.
Let's get into that. First of all, it's good that there's a backlash, and deservedly so. I mean, but
Can I throw
to be
something in
honest,
real quick? Just really quick, because I
yeah,
want you
sure.
to address this too as you talk about this. Lately, or when I say lately, I mean sort of in the modern, really big money era of sports, we see that athletes in general are not prone to speak up on controversial things, especially when those involve the people signing their paychecks at some level. But we, for the most part, we're not seeing that here. Like you said, we're seeing a lot of backlash. We're seeing players speak out. So I do want you, as you address this backlash, can you explain to me why this particular thing involving Sterling has sort of prompted athletes to sort of go over that threshold where usually a lot of times you'll see a no comment. I don't want to get into that. I'll talk to you, but only off the record. That doesn't seem to be the
Oh,
case
sure,
here.
easily. But first of all, Donald Sterling is low-hanging fruit. It's fashionable to bash him. As a matter of fact, you sort of rev up your so-called street cred right now, going after Sterling to make yourself good, if for no other reason. Maybe you really feel and you detest the man. That's fine. But I also think some of this, some of the outcry is a little hollow, a little disingenuous, built on BS, and very hypocritical. And I say that because where was this outcry a few years ago when Elgin Baylor took Sterling to court and accused him of having a plantation mentality when it comes to running his team? Where was Magic Johnson? Well, how come Magic Johnson didn't? And Magic Johnson's right there in LA. He knows Elgin Baylor. Where was Magic Johnson? How about Kobe Bryant? Kobe Bryant says right now he couldn't play for Donald Sterling. Well, that's bull. Because several years ago, when Kobe Bryant was on the outs with the Lakers and he's complaining about not getting the respect, he held court with Donald Sterling. He actually weighed the idea of playing for the Clippers. Imagine that. Michael Jordan, a guy who refused to endorse Harvey Gantt when he ran against
Right.
Jesse
Republicans
Helms.
buy sneakers too. Wouldn't
Right.
it come out against Jesse Helms?
Whoa, 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 whoa. So my point is, some of this I'm hearing from people right now, it's baloney. It's BS. And the sad thing is, the uninformed public is eating this up as though, oh my God, is Michael Jordan is all of a sudden Michael Jordan is Michael X, Mr. Militant right now? Michael Jordan, who, until Barack Obama ran for president. And of course, you want to, throw your weight behind a black president. It makes yourself look good. You get invited to parties and things like that. We never heard from this guy when it came to sensitive issues. He was too wrapped up in the whole corporate, mentality. Didn't want to offend people because he had sneakers to sell. I don't want to hear from Michael Jordan now. Okay, so and LeBron James, he's coming out against Donald Sterling. Okay, that's fine. But LeBron James, who makes your sneakers and where are they made? And do you ever come out against the working conditions, sweatshops and things like that, who are forcing you to sell $250 sneakers to poor black kids? How come we don't hear you? Now that you're all of a sudden you're socially aware, why don't you address that? So my point is this, Patrick. I know that the outcry to Donald Sterling is deserved, but two things. Number one, some of it is hollow and sort of, pumping up, your chest at the expense of Donald Sterling. Number two, there was amazing silence. no support, no public support at all for Elgin Baylor. And might I add, and this is even more damaging, there were poor blacks and Hispanics who were discriminated against, housing discrimination, Donald Sterling. Now, this was directly affecting, this wasn't just words, this was directly affecting their lives.
Much more harmful.
I never heard from fellow NBA owners while this was going on. Oh, now you're going to come out and woodwork and decry the comments by Donald Sterling and blah blah. Where were you then?
Well, here, I'm glad you're asking this because this is something I didn't understand this weekend about Sterling. Was the when the story broke, I was a little bit surprised it became such a big story. Only because this was hardly the first time we've seen this with Sterling. Like you said, it's been going on for not years, decades.
Patrick, I can tell you why. First of all, you need to know about the media. First of all, the media will get behind a cause if it serves their self-interest. You know, airtime to fill agendas. You know, to meet things like that, reputations. Well, I got to be the first to, you know, have this take, whatever. So, whenever something happens, you know, the media, and there are very few, very creative people in the media, original thought, who run media operations. It's sort of like a herd mentality, you know.
Sure.
You know, you run after it if it becomes a cause, and all of a sudden, blah blah blah. So, first of all, that's why this is sort of blown up, because of the herd mentality. The second thing, the herd mentality also exists among players. Now, look, a lot of the black players today have no idea what it feels like to be discriminated against. Number one, they didn't grow up in the 50s and 60s. Number two, from the moment that they could perform at age 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, they were deemed special by everybody, whites, blacks, whatever. So they never really felt racism. So all of a sudden, you know, they want to sort of understand what it feels like to be discriminated against, even though they live in insular worlds. A lot of the black players, they live like quote-unquote wealthy white people, you know, gated communities, you know, leafy suburbs, you know, nice jets and everything like that. And I'm not penalizing for enjoying the luxuries of life, but they don't know firsthand discrimination like Bill Russell, Arthur Ashe, Jackie Robinson, blah, blah, blah. And I think they sort of, in a sense, want to cast themselves in that realm, even though they have no idea what it was like.
The idea that Sterling's been doing this for a long time, I just want to dig this a little bit more, because I was surprised. You know, I thought I was pretty familiar with his long history here, but something that I had, I guess, missed, this is probably because in 1983 I was only 6 years old, but reportedly, Raleigh Massimino, basketball coach at Villanova, won a championship there, was interviewing with Sterling for a job opening back in 83. And Sterling supposedly asked him, I want to know why you think you can coach these N-words. You think about what happened recently with Riley Cooper and the use of that word. You think about back in that time in the early 80s with Jimmy the Greek, the NFL, you know, TV prognosticator, his getting into a lot of hot water and losing his job over some pretty gross racial stereotyping or theorizing, whatever you want to call what he was saying. Generally, there are negative consequences for acting like in this way, for acting pretty reprehensibly. Sterling, though, you say he seems to just keep chugging along in the NBA year after year, decade after decade, like sort of festering, if you will. Things have never really blown up around him until now. Why was he tolerated by the league? I can explain that.
Donald Sterling, for many years, has been seen by fellow NBA owners and as sort of like the, you know, the crazy uncle upstairs, where, you know, kind of his behavior was sort of dismissed as, well, that's Donald being Donald. And he really wasn't seen, he was seen as a clown.
So he was seen as harmless.
And not really taken seriously by the other owners. They mock him, you know, behind his back. And actually, to be honest, Donald Sterling has really been invisible as an NBA owner. He doesn't really go to many functions. Mm-hmm. He doesn't sit on a lot of, you know, you know, forums, committees, or anything like that. He's never chosen to be on the expansion committee, on a relocation committee, on a rules committee. You know what I'm saying? He's really not involved. He doesn't even really go to that many games. And lately, I'd say over the last several years, people in the organization have taken great steps to try to shield Donald from the public, particularly once the Clippers got to be really good,
mm-hmm.
because they knew that if left unleashed, Donald Sterling would simply do what he just got finished doing.
Well, you wrote, I was looking at your archive this morning, you wrote a piece for us in late 2012, basically predicting, okay, it's just a matter of time before Donald Sterling does something like this, and it blows
right.
up. And this time it's going to blow up because people care about the Clippers.
Yeah, but you know, again, look, there's this whole situation, there's so many hypocrites. Like, wasn't it just earlier this year that Matt Barnes, by the way, was one of the ringleaders in terms of the black armbands and
mm-hmm.
turning the jerseys inside out, the warm-up jerseys in and out, blah, blah, blah. This is also the same guy who 3 months ago got into a little bit of a scuffle and got fined. And then after the game said, you know what, he tweeted. He says, I'm tired of standing up for these N-words, you know. And then this is the same guy who defended his use of the N-word by saying, well, you know, that's a word I use in everyday, you know, everyday speech. My wife uses that word. I'm going to keep using that word. I don't care what people say. Now, how ignorant, how effing ignorant does Matt Barnes look right now? Does Matt Barnes look right now? Because you know what, Donald Sterling can say, hey, wait a minute. One of my players, a black player, said, hey, I can use the N-word. Well, how come I can't use the N-word? Now, of course, a different context, but still. How ignorant does Matt, how stupid does Matt Barnes look right now?
That's a really good point. You're right, Sterling can point to that. You talk about how the people at work for the Clippers kind of shield him from the public. You mentioned that. It seems like for the other owners, he was pretty easy to just ignore in a way. He said the crazy uncle, whatever, maybe you see him at Thanksgiving, that's it. He wasn't too involved in league business. This might seem like a really stupid and trivial question, but did the fact that the Clippers were just terrible year after year and essentially an easy win for the rest of the league, did that help in a way either for the other owners to be like, well, if this guy's going to mismanage his team, it's all the better for me, and or... well, the public's not going to pay attention to him, really, because his team isn't any good, so we don't really have to worry about it. Does just the fact the team was inept, did that help him cruise along?
No. I don't think... Look, you're talking about 2 wins a year for some team.
Mm-hmm.
That's not enough for them to want to keep Donald Sterling as a member of the club because he was an easy W. I don't buy that theory at all. I mean, it just doesn't register. I do think that the fact that the public at large just ignored him, I think, helped matters because, you know, it's sort of like this unspoken cooperation among the owners and the public. Hey, if you ignore Donald Sterling, so will I.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And therefore, to be quite honest, the NBA was basically waiting for Donald Sterling to die. Really, to
yeah.
die. Before, you know, they could wash their hands of the guy. And they were probably hoping that he would die before something like this happened. The guy's 81 years old. And by the way, he's not in great health.
Mm-hmm.
He's bloated. If you see him, a month ago. I was in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't look very good.
Okay.
And he's 81 years old. So
right.
they were just hoping that the guy would just die.
Right.
But, of course, this happened, and now they've got this on their hands.
Let's go back in time for a second. How did he get into the NBA in the first place?
Yeah, okay, here's a good story. Donald Sterling started buying up, you know, properties around L.A. right at the time when immigration, right? This is a guy who's against Mexicans and whatever. But right around the time of immigration, send great swaths of people to California. So
mm-hmm.
he snapped up property and made affordable housing and then later morphed into more luxury buildings. He owns pretty much half of Century City. Donald Sterling is worth about $2 billion.
Right, $2 billion. That's a lot of money.
And one thing about Donald, and it's the same philosophy he has with the Clippers, Donald never sells. He doesn't sell any of his properties. He never sells. He has hung on to every property he ever purchased.
Really?
He's a serial rental.
He's a hoarder. He's not a flipper.
No. Donald Sterling knew right away how valuable Southern California real estate would be. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you can go through great recessions, but if you own property in certain places in L.A., and he does, you will never feel the pinch. And that's why the guy is worth $2 billion and counting. So he owns, there's a part of L.A., I believe, Century City, a bunch of high-rise and everything. Donald Sterling owns like half of that. It's amazing the real estate portfolio this guy has. So anyway, he brought up some properties, and one of his friends, a guy named Jerry Buss, back in 1979, was short of some cash to buy the Lakers, and so Buss hit up Sterling for a loan. And so Sterling loaned Buss the money. Jerry Buss brought the Lakers from Jack Kent Cook, who later used that money to buy the Redskins.
Right.
Jerry Buss said, hey, he called his friend up one day. He said, hey, man, this is a great deal being an NBA owner. You should try it. And so Donald Sterling says, sure, why not? You know, and Sterling bought the Clippers from, they used to be based in Buffalo.
So Jerry Buss, the owner that all the owners loved, who was held up as this example of like what an NBA owner should be, he's the guy that brought the opposite into the league.
Absolutely. So that's his claim to shame, I guess.
This is really ironic.
Interestingly enough, here's another thing. When Jerry Buss died last year, he was the last owner who was still in place when Donald Sterling became a member of the ownership club. Now, every team in the NBA has changed hands at least once, but one team, and that's the Clippers. There is nobody, no owner who voted Sterling into the league still owns an NBA team.
Wow.
So Donald Sterling is a dinosaur. Anyway, that's how he started owning the Clippers, and right away it was sort of like a bubbling thing. You know, he moved the team to San Diego. He wanted them to have an L.A. address because Donald Sterling, you know, a lot of rich people, they have money and everything, but they also thirst for fame. That's the one thing their money really can't buy. However, if you own a sports team, you can be famous. You can be a big shot in the community, and Donald Sterling craved that, you know. So anyway, he had the Clippers. He was too cheap to build them their own arena. They played for years in the L.A. Sports Arena, which is a dump, you know, down in right near the USC campus. He had all sorts of offers to send them to Orange County after they built the pond in Anaheim where the Ducks play. And Sterling says, oh, no, because we're an L.A. team. I'm not going anywhere. And finally, he moved into Staples Center because it was such a great situation, even though he's paying a lot in terms of rent. But Sterling craved, you know, the Clippers trying to be wrapped up with the Lakers. Of course, they can't compete. They don't have the history. They don't have the championships. They don't have the cachet. They don't have any of that. So that, in a nutshell, is how Sterling got to be where he is right now.
Does David Stern, your former commissioner, should any of this, what's going on right now, lay at his feet at all? For not being able to do something about Sterling earlier, or pressure him in some way, or ignoring him? I don't really know what Stern's take on Sterling was. Does anyone know?
Well, I can tell you, because I've had discussions, not in-depth discussions, but I talked with David about Donald Sterling just about 3 years ago. This is back when the NBA gave Donald Sterling the All-Star game in 2011. Mm-hmm. David's response when it came to Donald Sterling was more like a roll of the eyes, like, you know, he's a pain in the ass, but what am I going to do? Basically, that's, in a nutshell, his response. And, see, David Stern is a hardline liberal. He's a champion of black causes. This is a guy, before he became commissioner of the NBA, or even worked in the NBA, he led a revolt towards housing discrimination and Teaneck and Tenafly, New Jersey. David was the lead lawyer on that case, and it was historic in the state of New Jersey. David was also the first one to bring black ownership into the NBA. The NBA offices have a healthy percentage of black employees and blah, blah, blah. So David's record on that, on racial issues, to the chagrin of Brian Gumbel, who once called him I think he called him a plantation owner or whatever, is stellar. But Donald Sterling was the guy that he was just like a burr in David Stern's side. You couldn't do anything with him. Because, again, you have to go back to the bylaws of ownership, mm-hmm. the rules of ownership. You can't kick an owner out of the club for being a bigot. You know, there's nothing in the language that says you can do that. Because then you'd have to prove it, and maybe they can, I don't know. And then it would open so many... It would open so many loopholes that maybe some of the other owners would be frightened about. You know, maybe there's a way that I can get ousted one day. And
sure,
like
they don't want that.
Absolutely. Not. So I don't think, and I'm not trying to absolve David Stern of anything. Maybe if he tried hard enough, who knows, to pressure Sterling. But one thing I said about Sterling, he doesn't sell. Number one, don't think David Stern hasn't tried to get Donald Sterling to sell his team. He has multiple times.
No luck.
But he can't force him. What are you going to do? You're going to twist his back, twist his arm around his back. What are you going to do?
Yeah, you
can't
said,
do it.
Right. You mentioned owning stuff. I mean, that's, you know, in a larger sense, I mean, that's, you know, that's our property rights is kind of like the big thing that our society is built around. And once you have them, it's very, very hard to lose them. It's hard to lose it.
Yeah, and here's one other thing. Donald Sterling, say what you will about the guy. He's a creep, a racist, blah, blah, blah. Maybe it's all true, whatever. He is a savvy businessman. Savvy. Savvy.
You don't get to $2 billion without being savvy.
Oh, no, you don't. And to hang on it as long as he has, first of all, he's 81 years old. Do you think he's still running his business? He's not really running his businesses, but he put them in such a position to be profitable year after year after year. Hop like for the Clippers. Now, look, the Bucks just got finished. The Milwaukee Bucks just got finished being sold for $500 million. What do you think the Clippers are going to fetch?
They got to be close to double that, right? I mean, in the LA market, with all this, the money you can make off local sports net cable stuff?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I'm not privy to their TV contracts, and I can imagine they're nowhere near what the Lakers are getting.
Oh, sure.
But Donald Sterling bought the Clippers for $15 million.
Pretty good investment.
Now, do you think he's going to get a return on his money?
Oh, yeah. Look, if I was Donald Sterling, I mean, I guess you don't need to. I mean, if you want to sell, you could sell. I almost want to create some sort of controversy to encourage myself to sell. But obviously that would actually bring down the price of your bid. It doesn't really make sense. But, something you mentioned a second ago about the other owners, obviously they probably like to get him out. On the other hand, they don't want to find and or add anything to those bylaws that would make it easier for them to be kicked out someday. We have, though, however, seen a couple of owners already speaking out against Sterling, and that the players speaking out didn't really surprise me. I mean, I think you made some good points about there being some hypocrisy there or some sudden outrage, but with owners, I always assume that they will just close ranks publicly. If for no other reason, they just want to avoid legal liability if and when the commissioner's office or the league takes some sort of action. And we saw Mark Cuban, right? He basically gave a no comment over the weekend. But then we also saw Peter Holt, Mickey Arison, and even, like you said, Michael Jordan issuing some pretty strong statements. What does it mean for Sterling's future with the league that other owners are publicly speaking out?
It doesn't mean anything, and here's why. As I said before, Donald Sterling doesn't sit on committees. He doesn't hobnob with the other owners.
So he doesn't care.
He doesn't care. I mean, seriously, if you're Donald Sterling and the 29 other owners want you out and they hate you, first of all, Donald Sterling doesn't even see them on a regular basis. He might see them once a year.
So it's not even going to be an uncomfortable breakfast meeting.
Yeah, but Donald Sterling doesn't care. I mean, seriously, when you think about it, why would you care about you're 29, the feelings of your 29 other owners, when you don't even see them, when your business doesn't depend on them, when they don't really have, to be honest with you, any impact in your life. And let me just say something about the owners who spoke out. Not many have spoke out. Number one. Obviously, Michael Jordan is going to speak out. But then again, you take that for what it's worth, given his history. And as far as Peter Holt was very tempered in his remarks. And he has to be. And same thing for Mickey Arison. They were very tempered in remarks because I'm sure Adam Silver laid down the law. He said, hey, you guys, let me handle this.
Right.
If you want to speak about it after there's a conclusion, fine. But right now, you know, chill. So, again, also understand that owners are probably protecting their own interests, maybe to curry favor with their own black players, saying, hey, I'm not that guy. You know, look, I think Mickey Arison, who I know, he's a genuine good man. Good man. But I think there's also a subtle message being sent to LeBron. Hey, LeBron, I ain't like that guy. You need to sign up for another contract.
Don't go to the Clippers. What people have talked about, LeBron might have considered the Clippers. Might have been one of the teams he would think about.
Well, no. LeBron wasn't going there anyway. But still, I think, again, when you hear things from players, look, Patrick, the sports world is filled with hypocrisy, people with pushing their agendas.
Oh, thank God. If it wasn't, I'd have nothing to write about. So
People trying to advance their careers in the media, so therefore this is all going on. And because people, by and large, have self-serving interests and agendas. And that's why I say that there is a whiff of insincerity when I hear these outcries, because I didn't hear anything when it came to those poor black and Hispanic residents who were discriminated against by Donald Sterling. I never heard anybody have Elgin Baylor's back when he filed a discrimination suit against Donald Sterling. I didn't hear anything from him. I didn't hear anything. So again, all of a sudden, when the floodgates open, everybody's grabbing a pitchfork and torches, and they want to light a match on the bonfire. You take that for what it's worth.
Do you think in the past, did this bother any of the guys who played for the Clippers? I think we saw Baron Davis. I don't know if he said or tweeted something about this is business as usual with Sterling. Do you think any of these guys were bothered?
No, let me tell you something. Hold on a second. Baron Davis was upset because he was overweight, and Donald Sterling sat at courtside and kept complaining about Baron Davis being overweight. Okay? And a lot of times, you know, when it comes to Donald Sterling, the players and coaches, they just want to take his money. That's first and foremost on their mind. They're not being socially conscious. They're not worrying about, you know, how it makes them look good in public. Blah, blah, blah. They want the money, okay? Baron Davis is like the rest of them. He wanted the money. As simple as that. Now, I'm not saying that Baron Davis wasn't offended when, you know, a little here and there, but Baron Davis, you know, I didn't hear anything about this from Baron Davis when he was collecting Donald Sterling's checks. Only now that the checks aren't coming, you know, and I'm not singling out Baron Davis. It's a lot of people. Grant Hill collected checks. Mm-hmm. Doc Rivers played for Donald Sterling, and now he's coaching for Donald Sterling. I didn't hear anything back then. I didn't hear anything from Doc Rivers about Donald Sterling until this weekend.
The NBA sent Chris Paul there. I mean, you know, David Stern basically arranged for Chris Paul to be there in some ways.
Well, look, Chris Paul was an unrestricted free agent this summer.
Right, and Chris Paul could have left if he didn't like it.
He could have left. Chris Paul had no allegiance to Donald Sterling or the Clippers. He could have signed. People would have cleared cap room for Chris Paul. As a matter of fact, Carmelo Anthony tried to get Chris Paul to come to the Knicks.
That's right.
Okay? So I don't want to hear people saying Chris Paul, well, he didn't have a choice. He was traded there by David Stern. That's BS. Chris Paul could have played for anybody last summer. He chose Donald Sterling. Period.
It's almost it's a shut up and put it in your pocket situation, it seems like.
Patrick, I'm telling you, it's the money. As much as they don't want to admit it now, it's all about the money. Look, when it comes to anything in professional sports, really any business, I'm not singling out professional sports, the two things you need to follow, particularly when it comes to males, you need to follow money and you need to follow the women. Okay?
Because this is the Scarface theory of life, by the way.
That's where the trail leads. Mm-hmm. It's going to either lead to the money or it's going to lead to the women. As simple as that.
What about fans? This is the part we haven't talked about yet. You know, I say that sort of collectively. But, you know, in one of your columns, you actually called out Billy Crystal a little bit, which I enjoyed, kind of being a Clippers super fan. You mentioned that housing settlement. You mentioned some of these other incidents with Sterling in the past. I want to read a little bit of things he allegedly said, by the way, from that housing settlement, just to give people a real taste. You know, these are quotes that Sterling allegedly said. "I don't like Mexican men because they smoke, drink, and just hang around the house." Another quote. "Is she one of those black people that stink? Just evict the B word." These are things that were out there in the public record. They were reported on. A friend of mine at ESPN Magazine, you know, Peter Keating, wrote a pretty long takedown of Sterling back in 2009. Another friend of mine, Bomani Jones, wrote a column back in 2006 when we were working together about this. Those two guys are not out on an island. A lot of people have written about this. You've written about Sterling in the past. None of us as fans seem to really care. We weren't boycotting. We weren't protesting. We weren't blowing up Twitter or social media. I mean, which is like the easiest form of protest, right? Writing something snarky on Twitter. We're not getting paid by Don Sterling in this case. Yeah, we weren't shutting up and putting the check in our pocket. Why, as the fans, as the public, were we not paying more attention or caring more about this? Do you have any ideas about that?
Oh, absolutely. Because it doesn't affect. We as human beings don't put a terrible amount of importance on something that doesn't affect us greatly or directly. Take racism, for example. I've always said this one thing about racism. You could erase racism from the face of the earth in 2 seconds, from the face of the earth, if white people were just as outraged as black people. It's the same thing about anti-Semitism. If Mexicans, the Japanese, white people, black people were just as outraged about that as they were about anything else, like it affected them great directly.
Mm-hmm.
So I also compare it to the economy. You know, presidents are easily electable if the economy is going good.
You're right.
And there are jobs, and people are making healthy salaries. Everybody's happy. But the moment you start taking money out of people's pockets, I would think that that's partly how Barack Obama was elected. The moment you start taking money out of people's pockets and the economy goes sour, and all of a sudden it's affecting them directly, then and only then will you see the outrage. So apply that to Donald Sterling. You know, a lot of people a lot of fans, Clipper fans, basketball fans, they're like, man, I just want to be entertained.
You're right.
You know, I don't care about Dom Stern. Doesn't affect
right.
me. I want to see Blake Griffin dunk. I want to see Dunk City. I want to see I want to see Chris Paul make some fancy passes.
I'm not paying to watch Don Sterling sit there, you know.
Yeah, and I want to go home. And I'll turn the TV on to something else. So, but as I said, right now it's fashionable. You look good, you feel good if you join the.
There's not a lot of risk, is there? There's not a lot of risk to come out against a guy who's basically seems pretty reprehensible and to say that guy sucks. It's like, okay, we all pretty much agree.
Patrick, he's low hanging fruit, and everybody's got a bat. Everybody's got a Louisville slugger. So it's easy now.
Here's a related question on that, which is this is kind of a media question, maybe. And you've been around longer than I have in this business, so you might have some insight I lack. I feel like, you know, and you've seen this too, there's a point where, like, sometimes stories that are big in sports, they never cross over into becoming big, period. And this one, to me, seems like it hit that escape velocity where now it's crossed over into, like, CNN. Like, it actually, CNN's like, wait, we're going to stop looking for that plane, and we're going to spend 10 minutes on this. You know, a story has arrived, and they stop looking for the plane for a few seconds.
Well, I think one reason is Barack Obama commented on it.
Right.
All of a sudden, It gave the green light to the political shows and things
that to
delve into sports. But also, Patrick, never underestimate the desire to fill airtime. You know, you've got a gazillion channels. They got to talk about something. And as I said before, the general managers and the producers and the directors and blah, blah, they are some of the least creative people on the face of the earth. They aren't creative enough to find quality programming, quality stories, pay to go get their original stories. So they will, again, latch on to anything that's got a little bit of electricity that's going to get some eyeballs, some viewers and things like that that they can sensationalize. And this was a layup to them.
You know, in their defense, by the way, I want to point out they're also looking at what people want to read about and watch. And like if there's a way to grab some low-hanging ratings fruit, I can't totally fault editors and producers for grabbing that. I mean, they have to, like you said, they have to pay their bills too.
I'm not faulting them for latching.
You're just explaining.
You know, jumping aboard. But where were they back in 2008, 2007? Where were they? Again, they're not creative enough to have seen Donald Sterling then. It just wasn't on their radar. But all of a sudden, when again, this great big buffet is put in their laps. Oh, well, hey, we got to jump on it.
Yeah, we got to not eat. I understand. You know, I have two theories on this. Let me see if you think there's something to both of these. I think one, it's one thing to read a deposition from a discrimination lawsuit and see these terrible things and feel badly about Don Sterling. But I feel like the fact that there's an audio tape, for whatever reason, like video or audio tape just seems to capture people's imaginations. I mean, I say this like you mentioned political shows. I mean, remember Mitt Romney's 47% tape? I mean, Mitt Romney was a plutocratic Republican. I don't want to get so political in the podcast here, but it was like we already knew, if you paid any attention at all to his history, to his politics, the politics of his party, that wasn't like a surprising sentiment at all. But once it was on tape, it was like, oh my God, listen to this guy. And I think there's an element of that here. I think the other thing is that, this might sound weird, but like Sterling brought Magic Johnson into this. You know, he told his girlfriend, don't be photographing Magic Johnson. Don't bring Magic Johnson specifically to games. And Magic's a huge celebrity that basically everyone in America knows and loves. And it's almost like, okay, now you've gone too far. That's just kind of my theory. Do you think there's truth to either one of those things?
I think you hit on two very good points. I guess if Donald Sterling was talking about Smush Parker, then, you know,
right.
Not. You know? And also, I don't dispute the value of audio and video when it comes to the electronic media, because it allows them to put a voice to the name. It allows them to play it constantly over and over and over again. You know, that's one reason why 911 calls, you know, PD laps that up, because it's, you know, it registers, it charges, it gets people to stop what they're doing and look at the TV and listen. So I don't discount the value of that and why, you know, the electronic media tends to gravitate toward a story that, you know, has something like that as opposed to, you know, a deposition.
We've been talking a lot about racism here. We haven't talked a lot about Sterling's long history of sexual harassment suits. And when you look at those, I think the kindest interpretation is that he's kind of a lecherous old rich guy who pays a lot for sex, doesn't have the highest opinion of the women he's sleeping with. Like I said, this is a charitable, family-friendly interpretation of what you can find if you go looking. Is there a point now that we've hit that feeding frenzy buffet point that you're talking about, where we as the public, as the media, are we going to start to get angry about Sterling's seeming misogyny too? Or is this going to just stay racial?
I think it's going to stay racial unless we hear from certain organizations, you know, trying to flush that out.
right.
that part of it out, you know, for public consumption, or just to sort of take that, you know, that whole aspect of the case and to put some sizzle to it. But I think that there's so many voices opposing the other aspect of the case that I think certain groups and people just feel that, you know, their voice, their cause will just get drowned out. You know?
Yeah.
I think people just get the idea of who he is and everything. And I just think that at that point, it's sort of just piling on, you know, even though piling on might be deserved. But it's just, you know, then it becomes just noise.
Well, you mentioned who Sterling is. Do you have any, you know, from covering the league for a long time and being around sports, like, do you have much sense? You said Sterling is kind of invisible in the NBA. Do you or anybody in the league have much sense for who this guy is? I mean, outside of the stuff that we're seeing here?
Not really, because he is kind of private. I've only spoken to him once, and it was a long time ago, and it was brief.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he doesn't really give many interviews,
mm-hmm.
Almost no one-on-one interviews. As a matter of fact, I can't recall the last time he was interviewed. And again, he's sort of like he's bizarre. First of all, he's an eccentric. He's bizarre. You know, Dominic Wilkins tells a story one day. Dominic Wilkins, back when he played for the Clippers, he went over to Sterling's house. And Sterling said, "I'll be with you in 1 minute. I have to spank my son." And the son at that time was 19 years old.
What? For yeah. real? Not for joking. Real.
Oh, no. This is no joke. He's an eccentric. He holds, when the Clippers used to go to the draft lottery of their every year, he would hold lottery parties at his house, and he would invite, you know, players, you know, Hollywood B-list types, and there would often be hookers there too. So, he's an eccentric,
right?
And just a weird old man who really couldn't connect with any of his fellow owners or really anyone else. He lives in a very insular world,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, he has his cronies and everything like that. But again, he just didn't connect with that many people, and therefore, not that many people know much about him.
Again, he seems kind of like the Bizarro Jerry Buss, like in so many ways.
Exactly, Bizarro, and I guess somewhat dangerous given his history.
Right.
But anyway, that's him in a nutshell, and as I said before, I think the league was just hoping that he'd die.
Well, speaking of the league, obviously this is kind of like the first big, I mean, I guess in some ways unexpected challenge for Adam Silver, the new commissioner. From what you know about him, you know, how do you think he's going to want to handle this? And then from what you know about, how you said, the bylaws, how the league works, and what's even possible, how do you think Silver will handle this? Like, what will he want to do? What will he be able to do? And how much of a gulf will there be between those two things?
I think it's a big gulf, because of what he wants to do, he would have done by now. I think that, you know, in this so-called crisis, I think we'll see what kind of leader he is. But also, this is not just Adam Silver's call.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of like the chairman of the board.
But there's all the owners, right?
Exactly. Who, by the way, are his bosses.
Yep.
So, whereas he does have he has unique powers as a commissioner, this sort of has to be done by committee.
Yeah, he's not going to move unless they tell him, yes, we agree with this.
Yeah, his power, he has great powers when it comes to discipline, when it comes to negotiating, contract, all those things. But when it comes to dealing with owners, then those powers are drastically reduced, because, you know, again, they're his boss. Now, he can fine owners or discipline owners to a degree, but again, he can't force an owner to sell.
And like you said, it doesn't sound like, I mean, Sterling's rich, $1 million fine is going to be nothing to him. You said he's kind of a Phantom of the Opera-like presence around his team anyway, so even suspending him in some way from showing up to games or, you know, having a say with the Clippers probably wouldn't even make a huge difference to him. I don't think these would be punitive measures that another owner might take a lot more harshly than Sterling would.
Well, let's put it this way. Mark Cuban would be destroyed if Silver said he can't go any more Mavericks games, because Cuban's here all the time.
Right.
He travels with the team. He's, you know, sitting by the bench and blah, blah.
It's his life. He loves that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, Donald Sterling is like, oh, really? Okay, no problem. You know,
I'll have another lottery party or something. I'll pretend like it's old times.
Exactly. And so if you say, well, you can't show up at any more owners' meetings, Sterling would say, oh, okay. You know, I wasn't really there to begin with. So, and if you're going to fine him $1 million, well, again, this is a guy who's worth $1.6 billion, says, oh, okay. So, again, the only way you can do some serious damage is if he sells. And to be honest with you, even when you do that, he stands to pocket, you know, upwards of $800 million.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, he's gonna walk away with close to $1 billion potentially. And in fact, I wanted to ask you, we saw a report this morning from Yahoo. Magic Johnson and his group, you know, the billionaire sports group, Guggenheim Partners, that bought the Dodgers, that they're putting it out there, they want to buy the Clippers.
Well, let me just say something about that.
Yeah, what do you think of that?
Well, that's a lot. I think that's applying pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of throwing themselves in the mix. I'd be very curious as to how much money they had after spending $1.1 billion on the Dodgers. Whether or not they have that kind of coin that toss another close to $1 billion for the Clippers, which, by the way, I'm not so sure would be a great buy, because the Clippers just don't have the kind of following in L.A.
Mm-mm.
as the Lakers. They can't command the kind of TV revenue. They don't own their own building, you know. So, you know, it's a clever ploy, and I'm not saying that there is no interest on their part, but I just don't see that happening. And by the way, if there was ever a sale, there would be more of an auction-like setting.
Sure.
So,
yeah,
you know, a lot of people would probably want to get into that.
Right. And the thing with that, too, you say about sort of would the numbers work, that does get into sort of the whole, like you said, like the, if you're buying that, it's like when they bought the Dodgers, you're expecting to make a ton of money from like your regional sports cable package or deal or channel of some sort. And they're actually having issues right now. Time Warner is with the Dodgers channel they've created and getting the other carriers to pick it up. And it kind of touched on some of the sports cable bubble stuff I wrote about last year, which is kind of an ongoing developing thing. So whether the numbers would even work now, they might, but 5-10 years down the road, depending on sort of how viewership habits change and if you can keep the cable bundle together or not, a lot of different factors, that could be a deal that ends up blowing up on investors. Even though overall, obviously, these franchise values generally just go up because they have a monopoly and there's only going to be X number of teams. So it's not like investing in an NBA team is a bad investment, but that specific deal and that specific group, I agree with you. It'd be really interesting to see if they did make a purchase or make a serious bid, how were they planning to finance it? And I guess it's too early for us to know.
Well, there's one thing that's in a prospective buyer's favor. The NBA TV contracts are up in about, I think, two more years.
Oh, they're going to be bigger, right?
Yeah, and so therefore, the current contract calls for the NBA to make about $950 million. The next one could double, because you're going to all of a sudden get NBC is going to come into play.
Right.
ESPN will probably still be there. Turner probably still wants to stay, because they really don't even have any other sports program.
Mm-hmm.
And their Inside the NBA show is so popular that you know, I'm sure they want to keep that brand. So I can tell you right now, that next national TV contract is going to be a whopper.
Right. So whoever is owning the team at that point will benefit from that. Yeah, whether that's enough to make up for the specific financing, I guess we'd have to wait and see.
Right.
Last question. I did say originally we were just going to talk about the playoffs. You watched the Clippers play yesterday. Like you said, it almost like they might as well have boycotted. How much do you think this is actually affecting them on the court yesterday, and going forward, will this continue to affect them?
I'm more sure about what happened yesterday than I am about going forward. I think it affected them a lot. You could just see in their faces they weren't ready to play that game. I mean, you know, they frowned their way through the game. There was no emotion, no spirit. I saw one time Chris Paul got kind of shoved and got an elbow in his ribs, And Chris Paul is usually he's a tough guy.
Yeah, he is. He'll punch you in the balls. He'll punch you right back in the balls. Yeah. We've seen that. That's on video.
But he didn't do anything. He just, so there was no spark. Now, going forward, I think a lot of it depends on two things. Number one, how the crowd reacts Tuesday, how the home crowd reacts Tuesday, the support they give the Clippers. I think it's going to be tremendous, by the way. And I think the other thing is going to be from the organization itself between now and then. Donald Sterling's, I think he still has one or two kids. I know he lost one, but do they step up? I know his soon-to-be ex-wife, she has already stepped up. How do they convince the players that, hey, this is all going to be taken care of. We're solidly behind you. You just go play. And finally, whether Adam Silver has any kind of verdict between now and then.
A lot
can happen between now and Tuesday, but the next time they step on the floor, that will dictate their mood.
Yeah, I mean, so in some ways it seems like psychologically, can you all just go back to being, well, this guy's just the crazy uncle. Yeah, what we started the podcast with. If you can get back to that psychological place, you can probably go out and play and be fine.
And Patrick, that was just what? Friday, about 3 days ago. Just think about what's changed since then.
Things can happen fast. These kind of things happen slowly and then all at once, right? All these years of Sterling, 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 and then boom. One little thing sort of sets it all in motion. Sean Powell, we are out of time here. Before we go, obviously people can find you on Sports on Earth, and I recommend everybody go to the site, read Sean's stuff. It's great. How can people find you on Twitter?
I'm at Powell to the People. That's P-O-W-E-L-L, the numeral 2-D-A, people. Powell to the People.
Power to the people. I almost want to raise my fist in solidarity here.
Yes.
That's great. And last thing, too, I really do want to just talk about basketball. Can you come back soon? And we'll talk about the playoff scale a little bit deeper. We'll talk about what's going on the court.
All you got to do is give me a ring.
Terrific. I'll take you up on that if next week or the week after, one or the other.
You know, the playoffs have been very exciting. I think almost half of the games so far have been decided by 5 points and less. The Portland-Houston series, almost pretty much every game has gone into overtime. What's unfortunate for the NBA is that this has been an exciting slate of first-round games, with the exception of Miami-Charlotte.
Right.
And yet, something else has dominated the discussion.
Yeah, I mean, it is unfortunate. Yeah, that's why we're talking about this today. But we'll get back to hoops. We'll get there. In the meantime, Sean Powell, thank you again. And as always, I am Patrick Ruby of Sports on Earth, saying goodbye, Ruby Tuesday.